Run sports show. Fort Wayne to the world. Bryce got the box score, calm on the mic. Pulling up numbers from last Friday night. Sack gyms packed, rivalries loud. He'll tell you who balled out, who hyped the crowd. DC slide in with the hold up weight. Spicy little rant, that's a hot take plate. Coach talk, Pacers talk, all in the mix. Midwest mind with that ESPN fix. Sideline Sports Show, Bryce in D.C. From the Fort Wayne courts to the big TV. Indiana Hoosiers dreams, go to go scenes. Whole Midwest running through the calling stream. Sideline Sports Show, you know that vibe. Stats and smoke in a four-quarter ride. Turn it up loud when the game day starts. They break it all down like they call in charge.
What? It's a Saturday and the Sideline Sports Show is live, yes. We decided to do it a day early. We've got some family plans going on tomorrow, so we decided to bring you the show one day early. Still a lot to talk about here locally, sports-wise. I mean, just more and more topics, it felt like, were coming up as the week was going on, and a lot to do with high school sports specifically, including basketball and football. And I'm very intrigued by what is going to transpire on the show today, because I think it's going to be a lot of healthy debate, or at least hashing some things out on like what we think might happen as far as the future of the SAC. And does that feel like it's on the brink of no longer being in existence? Also with the high school basketball side, it's the long drawn out debate of a shot clock. Will it finally be added this May? It won't come into effect for another 2 years, but they're voting on it in just about a week or so for the opportunity to implement a 35-second shot clock. We'll get into that. We'll have Kyle Nedenrep from the Indy Star, very plugged in around the state of Indiana about this topic and so many other things with high school sports and high school football and basketball. He's one of the best in the state, has been for quite some time. NFL draft is going on this weekend, and we've had DC apparently has no interest in the draft. Why is that, man?
I mean, it's boring. There's no stars in it. It's going to be like Fernando Mendoza and everyone else.
I would say that
I do like Chase Downs.
Caleb Downs?
Caleb Downs.
Yeah.
Jeremiah Lowe. On paper, the Arizona Cardinals had the best draft so far. On paper.
Yeah, but I don't like the franchise, so I'm not super thrilled with.
Nobody does. Have you ever met an Arizona Cardinals fan?
I can't say that I have.
Me neither. In my entire life.
Yeah. So we'll talk about all things that. We'll talk about some of the Notre Dame players that have gone, some of the IU players that have gone, what the Colts have done so far, doing the Colts thing of trading back to try and get more picks. Seems like they do that every single year. We'll get into some drafts and some other local things here. We are part of the Get Indiana Podcast Network. Go to Get Indiana for your destination for everything Indiana, for festival and event blog post. Make sure you get tuned in, because Nate Spangle is going to be hyping up the Indy 500 coming up here in about a month. If you want a chance to win some tickets, he's doing a promo on there as well. So go to getindiana.com. You can also subscribe to their newsletter. They are pumping out a lot of content, and they're trying to grow their network as well. And we're happy to be a part of that network, as well as they're trying to start some, you know, satellite sites. They already do a lot of coverage for South Bend, Evansville, trying to do one here in Fort Wayne as well. So make sure you subscribe to their weekly newsletter at the top of the page. DC, you and I are fans of high school football around here. You have been more plugged in covering the sport with Indiana Preps this past season, and you're obviously going to continue doing that this year. You've been really plugged in on the high school scene. And I mean, obviously we've both been covering high school football for, you know, 10 years now, at least, you know, covering it on the radio side or in print or online. And the article that came out this past week from Outside the Huddle, which you have contributed to, I have contributed to in the past, and it was, I don't know, the tone of it was like, man, this feels like that we are on the brink of a major shift here locally as far as the SAC conference. And the SAC conference gets a ton of love here in the 260. It is obviously made up of all the biggest schools in Northeast Indiana, and it gets a lot of coverage from news outlets. You know, probably second place would be the NEA, then the NECC and ACAC. But it was an article Outside the Huddle that there is some consternation among SAC coaches, principals, administrators that this conference is not, you know, there's some good and some bad with the way that the results have gone on the field. Some coaches are, you know, looking to potentially exploring, I should say, to potentially, you know, leave the conference or make some drastic changes. And already an announcement has already been made that Concordia and Carroll will not play for the next 2 years. Also in that article of that announcement was Concordia and Homestead. Their matchup might also be on the chopping block. So when you hear all of this, that there is consternation in the SAC that the opponents who are at the top and at the bottom, it feels like the gap is just widening each year with Carroll, Homestead, that are just absolutely dominating the bottom of the conference, you know, the South Sides, you know, Northrop's on occasion, you know, they had a really good year this past year and they've been building up. And obviously we had their new coach on and he seems to be like that they're going to try to keep this thing going. But Concordia, as mentioned, they've, you know, just not, they haven't been competitive in the conference. Like I said, alongside Southside, you know, Northside has had up and down seasons here recently. They've been good. Then they would fall back to the pack a little bit. So it feels like that the conference is in flux right now. And I'm interested to see where it goes. I've thought about the possibilities of like, is the conference just no longer going to exist and they're going to split it up? And could these two big schools in the area, Carroll and Homestead, go by themselves? Because they only play in the SAC in basketball and football. So it'd be just easy for them to just go fully independent. But we've seen there's other examples around the state of like a Carmel going independent, but I think they're going back into the MIC this year. So what are your thoughts after seeing the article and then all the discourse online about it?
Yeah. So a lot of this uproar and, you know, obviously the SAC has always been extremely competitive. And now it's getting even, I would argue, even more top heavy than usual. You know, at the top, you got Carroll, Homestead, Northrop, Dwenger, Lewis, and then the bottom half, it's a big drop off. Mm-hmm. And so according to my sources, you mentioned it pretty much already. It started with Concordia saying that they don't want to play Carroll and Homestead.
Yeah. Well, and by the way, that would mean that neither team is eligible for the victory bell.
Correct.
So they can't be
really surprising that Carroll would give that up.
I'm actually not, because they are relatively new to the SAC. True. I mean, they were in the NHC for a long time, the Northeast Hoosier Conference that was made up of Carroll, Homestead, DeKalb, East Noble, those types of schools. And then the big schools broke off, and then that's when they brought in, I think, Leo in Huntington North. And that was, gosh, how long ago was that? That was at least 15-plus years ago. It's surprising, but I'm not overall shocked, you know, by it. Just because they don't have that long history of SAC.
Well, it started off with Concordia saying they don't want to play Carroll Homestead.
Yeah.
And then once they said that, my Southside Archers jumped in and said, well, if Concordia doesn't have to play Carroll Homestead, then we don't want to play them either. And it's all been pretty much discussions brought up ever since then. So, yes, I don't know if we're going to end up becoming, and of course, next week we'll, you know, kind of – give it a little time to see where it goes, because it's still really fresh. But as of right now, this is what we know. that the discussions are being made to either split up the SAC or it may not even not even be what we once known it. It could end up being like the small division, big division.
Yeah, because that's what they do in the NECC. There's the, I think it's split into four piece in football. Because Westview and Westview doesn't play football. So they're just in it for basketball and the rest of the sports outside of football. So I can see this thing going a number of different ways. Mm-hmm. Like you said, big, small division, do Concordia and Southside try to join another conference? Is there another conference all formed all together? If you take out Homestead and Carroll, do Concordia and Southside decide to stay? You know, I think everything's on the table, as it said in the article at the very end. Like, everything's on the table. Plans, I think, are being discussed, amongst coaches and assistants and administrators, and we're just seeing, what's been, published. I imagine that there's just everything, like I said, is on the table. Could, a Carroll and Homestead, join a conference that includes, teams that are closer to Indy, because that's what like is part of this is the big schools in the SAC don't feel like that they are getting those competitive games so that when they get into 6A and 5A games that they haven't been tested. And then they go down and play a Noblesville or Carmel and they just, sometimes they get blown out and sometimes, they're competitive. It just depends on the year. And as far as, the smaller schools like Concordia, like Southside, they pick up a win here and there in the postseason, but they just get trampled on throughout the regular season. So that maybe sometimes by the end of the season, you're just like, can we get this thing over with, man? We've gone through, 9 weeks of getting our teeth kicked in. We maybe have one win, and that's over possibly the other team at the bottom of the SAC.
Yeah.
And we're hoping to be competitive in class 4A, class 3A in those sectionals. And a lot of the times they are more competitive in those games. If you have a Concordia taking on a DeKalb or a Lakeland or something like that, or an East Noble. I mean, East Noble is, been the cream of the crop in the NEA and, in the class of 4A.
Like Southside almost beat them.
Yeah. So like they are. Yeah. So that's why I think. Yeah. So that's why I think it's like it is on the table. Like,
yeah,
that you could have a Southside or a Concordia join, the NEA and make it something else or just make a whole new conference. Cause we've seen around the state that new conferences have formed, I think, more. I don't want to say more rapidly than ever, but it feels like at least once 1 to 2 years we're having new conferences form, especially with like as newer schools are coming on, like new charter schools and smaller private schools are coming on. So I mean, does this open the door for a Blackhawk Christian who's got football and see where they fall in? Like it's,
I think you freaking destroyed.
No, I mean, I'm just saying if they build this program up to to where they're competitive against like the smaller, schools, they're playing in class 1A, but I'm fascinated to see where this goes because I think like I said, like I've said multiple times already, everything's on the table. We could have and Carroll and Concordia don't have opponents for like week 3 and week 8 over the next 2 years. So they need to find an opponent for this upcoming season. And if you go to John Harold, he has like a great thing on his website that lists like when teams have open dates and are looking for games. I'm super intrigued by this because it all depends on where you are at. If you're a Southside team, you're looking to get wins during the regular season and make sure that you are competitive and healthy and are able to compete in the postseason And whereas, you know, your homestead, you're looking to, you know, be tested week in and week out. And by the time you get to the postseason, you can compete with a Westfield or, you know, a Crown Point or something like that, a Valpo. You know, those, I think these programs are all at different stages and they're all looking for a solution that is, I think, good for all. I don't know if we'll get that. I doubt we get something that's great for everybody because somebody's always left, you know, stuck out, like, and not content with what happens, but it's very interesting, and I'm interested to see where we go from here because things could look a lot different over the next couple of years in the SAC.
So yeah, all this was started by like to catch everyone up. The SAC, we're just joining the SAC, the Summit Athletic Conference, in our area, Northeast Indiana football, could be getting a shakeup because it all started with Concordia saying that they don't want to play Carroll and Homestead during the regular season in football. Southside jumped in and said, well, if Concordia doesn't want to play them, then we don't want to play them either. And then it went from there to them asking also Northrop and Dwinger and them saying, you know what, that's not a bad idea. So that is what's gotten these discussions going for the SAC. Could be getting a split up, could be split in different ways. Teams could be leaving, going to other conferences. We don't know yet. So we wanted to just bring up the source, the story that was posted at OutsideTheHuddle.net. And next week we will have Justin Kenny on our normal slot on Sunday morning. Justin Kenny from Outside the Huddle and OPS. He's going to come on and help us put everything into contrast and talk about it a little bit more extensively because it's still really fresh and still, you know, a lot of information still being, you know, sent out to the public. So a lot of behind the scenes stuff going on with the SAC and football, which for me, for someone that's been, you know, played in this conference and just been around it for so long, I'm definitely going to sound like a get off my lawn type. I don't like a lot of change when it comes to that kind of stuff. So I personally am going to admit early on, I don't like the idea. I'm just going to go ahead and say that out loud now. If you want to be competitive, if you're at Concordia and Southside, if you want to be competitive, get better.
Yeah, I would say
your program.
Yeah, I mean they probably have their reasons why that it's not as competitive. I mean, because Concordia, well, I understand your point of view. I'm just saying I think that it it's difficult. I think for some of these programs that want to, you know, find these competitive games, because if you remember, like they switched up the scheduling a couple of years ago when they split up into, you know, divisions, you know, so to speak, of where who you play every single year, but in the, left up in the gaps of week one and week two for you to play outside the conference while still being able to compete for the conference overall later on in the season with conference games.
Yeah.
And I think that has helped a little bit because you're able to play, you know, competitive games. I mean, the first that come to mind is like an East Noble and Snyder, like, and East Noble has, you know, has been that program that has been able to compete with the likes of an SAC team. Even, you know, Snyder's at the top of the conference most years. So it's, I think it's crucial for these, you know, mid-level, low tier programs that have just been in this cycle of, you know, being in the middle of the conference or near the bottom, and they just can't find their way up to the top, that they're just trying to find a way to be competitive and actually have a program that is able to compete and not just get trounced every single week during the season. So
this is also a quick point I wanted to get out too. This is a great point, and it comes from one of the coaches in the SAC. Should I make it public?
Yeah, it's Coach Ben Johnson. He's all coming right, cool. on the show here.
All right, yeah. Northside Coach Ben Johnson. This is a great point, and this is in addition to what we were talking about. If y'all only knew how hard it is to find games, better stay in conference because you got those guaranteed games.
Yeah. Is that simple? Yeah. And
I know they were struggling to find, I think it was a week one opponent, I think they were struggling, and ended up, I think, scheduling East Noble, but it's hard to even schedule games.
Yeah, and I know for, like, teams that, you know, we just keep using East Noble as an example. They want to find competitive games as well. So they go to, because they have a similar the conference isn't as big, so they have the two open dates at the beginning of the season to play a non-conference game. And historically, they've went and played a Northwood or a North Ridge. They've kind of gone west to find those games because those programs over there have been good. Like a Plymouth when they were really good. They played a Mishawaka type. But when the SAC changed their schedule a few years ago, then it allowed them to add, a Northside, a Snyder. And they, I think, wanted to have those type of games because when they get to the postseason in Class 4A, they're running up against a Northside, a Bishop Dwenger, a lot of it's made up of their own conference, or a Southside. They're made up of those teams, so it makes sense for them to play those types of programs early on. And as to Coach Johnson's point, it's hard for programs to find games that, can be agreed upon on both sides. Even if it's just like a one-off, it's still hard to come back the next year if you have a, bad experience, or you go play a non-conference game and just get the, crap kicked out of you, or you beat someone so bad that they don't want to play you again because you're just at these different levels. And
some of it is field amenities too.
Yeah, it's like,
I will say though, at all seriousness, and this kind of lighten the mood a little bit, Coach Johnson, you might have a little bit more. It might be a little bit of an easier time getting schools with that new press box you got over there. It's looking nice over there. Snyder getting their own field finally. The SAC, things looking up, man. So why leave? Things are looking up.
I'm not sure if Coach
Johnson Southside got turf. You know what I'm saying? Like, what are we complaining about? No, play ball.
I think there's probably some issues that aren't public that are not being said by everyone. Obviously you and I both know Coach Johnson is very open, very vocal about his opinion. So I think there might be some other opinions out there in among administrators and coaches that are not as vocal and are trying to have their opinion maybe stay behind closed doors and trying to figure this thing out, and that's fine. I just think that we're just and I understand where both sides are coming from, of a Concordia and like a Southside and a Carroll and a Homestead of. You want to play competitive games. You want.
I understand Carroll and Homestead's argument, but I don't understand why Southside and Concordia can't just simply build your program, just make it better. Southside was once when I was there. Southside was a good program, So I don't understand what the uproar is. Improve your program and compete.
No, I get it. But they've just went into the cycle of where they're down and they're just trying very hard to pull. And it's been a long time, especially for Southside. I can remember when I was covering high school football regularly for KPC that Concordia was competitive and good in the SAC, whereas Southside feels like they've just been at the bottom of the conference for quite some time. Yeah. So it's
didn't have to bring it up. I got you.
No, but I know you being an Army grad. It's tough for you. Like we said at the top of the show, we have a lot of high school sports topics, and they just kept bubbling to the surface this past week. So we are always happy to talk about them because we love talking about our high school sports, not just here locally in the 260, but across the state. And we mentioned at the top of the show that the IHSA is looking to vote on potentially adding a 35-second shot clock. And to talk more further about it, I can think of no better guest than Kyle Nedrip from the Indy Star joining us here on the show. He has been a guest of our show when we were back on the radio days. So, Kyle, thank you so much for joining the show and welcome back. This vote that is going to happen on May 4th. I know it's been a huge discussion, especially when you published, the article this past week. It obviously will get a ton of comments anytime you mention shot clock here in the state of Indiana. What has been the reaction to this time around? And are we seeing a change in opinion for it or against it? Is it slowly going one direction or the other after you've written that it's going to be a vote on May 4th?
Yeah, I think kind of the nature of the way the world is going with high school basketball across the country. I think 32 states had a shot clock as of this past basketball season. And that's up from, I remember a few years ago, it was probably 7 or 8 states that had a shot clock. So it's dramatically going up across the country. So that kind of leads us to the point where we're at now, where the IBCA has put this together and made it a proposal. The original proposal had it for next season. They've since changed that to make it the 28-29 school year. This wouldn't go into effect next year, even if it does pass. But I really get the sense, and I went to a principal's meeting yesterday with the IHSA, kind of sat in and listened to the discussion. Mostly the discussion was Paul Neidig talking about the various proposals, including the shot clock, and then, getting a straw poll from the audience, which is essentially made up of principals and athletic directors. And this one is just for that meeting was just for our area here, probably about 50 to 60 people, but they do these all over the state. And from what I gathered from Paul Neidig was about 70% of the administrators are against it. It's probably the exact opposite of coaches who are for it. But I think they're going to listen to the constituency of ADs and principals and probably not vote it through, would be my guess for this round. Do I think it will happen eventually? Yes, I think so. I don't think it'll be this vote. I could be wrong, but I kind of get the sense that people aren't quite ready to go through with this. I think the cost is a little prohibitive. And I know there's very strong arguments on both sides of it. I'm kind of down the middle. Like, I don't necessarily think it's the end of the world if we don't have one, but I also like basketball with a shot clock. So, I can kind of see it both ways, but my sense is that it's not going to pass. And like I said, that's me kind of reading the tea leaves a little bit, but it's kind of the sense I got being there yesterday.
So you say you understand both sides, and I am, I'm more on the shot clock side. So I'm just trying to understand, is it more from the administrator's side? Is it simply money? I mean, because you think you got to pay for it. You got to pay somebody to run it in addition to it. Is that the one indicator that you think is the main issue that they have with it? Or do you think there's some other things as well?
No, I think that's one of the issues. And if they said like, hey, it's going to cost $10,000 to put in shot clocks. That seems a little high to me, but I'll take them at their word on what they say. And if that's the case, I mean, I understand that, in this world we're in now where you're cutting teachers, you're cutting, dollars are a little hard to come by. Now, do I think you could raise the money in 2 years to put in shot clocks? Yeah, I think it's possible to do that. But I understand that to a certain point. I think it's also, it's adding another person to the scores table. I mean, that's something that comes up a lot. I'm kind of like, hey, we figured out a play clock in football. I think we can figure out how to do a shot clock. So I think that's kind of an excuse that I don't think is that valid. I do understand from an official standpoint, it's like it's one more thing you got to deal with as an official. You're already getting yelled at by idiots. Do you want to add that to the things you're getting yelled at? So I get that part of it. I also do wonder too, like these other states are doing it. I don't hear a whole lot of complaining, and most people I've talked to say it's not that big a deal. We've done a shot clock and it's been fine. So I think there's a lot of things that are like, I think this is fine if we do it. One of the things you do here is kind of like, hey, some of the smaller schools don't want it because it does take away a coaching tactic of not necessarily holding the ball, but running your offense and, trying to use that as a tactic to win. We saw it in the 4A game a little bit. We saw the crowd's reaction was just so negative. And I think it honestly put Crown Point in a situation where it kind of put the crowd against your players. So I think it ended up working against them. But I do understand that, if you're trying to win a sectional game and the only way you can do it is to keep the more talented team from having the basketball, that's something you can do. So I think it's more than one thing, but I cover a lot of games every year. I rarely run into a situation where I'm seeing a team hold the ball, but I'm also covering mostly 4A games and, teams that don't have any reason to hold the ball. So, to me, it's like not that big a deal. Like I think, the 4A teams around here could add a shot clock and the game would not look any different, but, you know, I guess, you know, I guess there, you know, there's different ways to play basketball, and I get that part of it too.
Do you think that happening in that 4A game, and I'd imagine, you know, Commissioner Nightig was there in attendance and watching the game and seeing him being like a part of that reaction. Do you think, and I imagine other IHSA officials are in attendance as well, do you think that had any, you know, influence on what may happen?
Yeah, he actually brought that up at the meeting, and he kind of brought it up in a way of like this topic is at the forefront. He also brought it up as a fact that, like, Clinton Swan knows his team, and he wanted to use that. And they ended up, you know, the first time they did it, they got a good shot and made it. The second time they did it, they took a lesser good shot and missed it, and then they kind of went away from it. So, to me, it wasn't like the defining factor of the game, but it's something people remember from that game. Probably the number one thing they remember from that game is holding the ball. So I do think it brought the topic to the forefront. I don't think it's why Crown Point lost the game necessarily, but I do think it factored into it. They, you know, it's funny because they started that third quarter. To me, they were the better team in the first half. They started that third quarter shooting 5 3-pointers for some reason. And then I think Clint Swan's like, well, let's keep from doing that, you know, and maybe that was a way to try to keep that from happening. But, you know, to me, it ended up not working because the crowd kind of, and I think Mount Vernon kind of felt like, oh, they're scared of us, you know, and they shouldn't be, but they are. So I think it ended up working against them. But I do think it did bring that to the forefront. This was going to happen anyway. This proposal was going to happen. But it is kind of interesting and just kind of an anecdotally that a team ended up holding the ball in that game and kind of brought this topic even more to the forefront.
Yeah, so everything with sports is numbers. So as we're talking numbers, what percentage would you give the chance that the 35-second shot clock is implemented, and how long do you think it'll take?
I think it'll happen. I think the proposal will come up again in 2 years. And I think it, you know, if I had to guess now, it will pass at that point. Cause you kind of, you know, I kind of was wondering yesterday, I'm like, I wonder how many states will have a shot clock in 2 years, you know, assuming this doesn't pass in a couple of weeks. You know, I wonder how many states by that point in 2 more years will have a shot clock. You know, it could be, you know, and I guess you could keep this in place because, you know, we're in 2026. You could vote again in 28 and then maybe be like, all right, 28, 29, we're putting a shot clock in. So you could kind of have the same calendar in mind and then vote again in 2 years. So I wouldn't rule out, like, just because this vote may not go through on Monday or whenever, a week from Monday, it may happen in 2 years, and it may be the same timeline. They may say, hey, you know, kind of prepare for this, you know, get your shot clocks in, kind of, you know, not under the table, but just kind of in preparation of this maybe happening. Might not be the worst, you know, expenditure in the world to get yourself ready for this. I think it'd be a great idea just to have the 4A schools do it for like a trial run, you know, maybe, or, you know, do it. I know some states have done that where they've had the bigger schools play with the shot clock and then, you know, kind of slowly implement it into the smaller schools. So I think that could be something, you know, if I'm guessing, you know, could be something they try, but yeah, I wouldn't just because the vote may not go through. I wouldn't think it's impossible. It happens in 2 years and they could keep the same calendar in mind.
You mentioned that the coaches, for the most part, want it. Is it at all four classes that there is some interest in wanting this?
Yeah, definitely from the 4A, the bigger schools definitely do. I didn't not see a breakdown on all the schools. I know, you know, when they go to these meetings, I think they were in Southern Indiana the day before Plainfield, like maybe New Albany or, you know, and they had a lot of the schools were smaller schools, obviously, down there. I think they only had one vote in favor of a shot clock. So that kind of shows me like we're not probably ready for this right now as far as administrators go. You know, at our meeting yesterday, it was I think 71% were against and 29 in favor. So, you know, a little bit more in favor, you know, where they had bigger schools were involved. But yeah, I would say I bet, and we do a straw poll every year before the season starts, and you know, it's an anonymous poll, and I get some feedback from people on around here, and I would say it's at least 70% in favor, probably even more than that. So I would say upwards of 80 even in favor of a shot clock. So the teams I cover would prefer it, which doesn't surprise me. I don't know the girls breakdown, like there may be fewer on the girls side who want it, but I would think it'd probably run around the same for the girls too. So, but yeah, it's definitely around Central Indiana. The teams I cover mostly, they're strongly in favor of it.
Yeah. I think it's also school dependent up here as far as like class size. I think teams like in the SAC, I think would be fine with it. Most of them are, you know, up and down type of programs. And you mentioned, you know, a couple minutes ago about the money. Is this something that, you know, maybe where the Pacers or the Fever can come in and maybe sponsor this? I've heard that idea thrown around and help out some of these schools to, you know, put in a shot clock, the ones who haven't already done it.
Yeah, that I mean, that sounds like something that's possible. You know, the Pacers do a lot, the Fever do a lot already to be involved, and I think that would make sense if it's possible. And I could see schools even individually maybe getting some grants and things like that would make it doable. So I definitely think that's something to look at, and maybe that's why. Maybe we need a little bit more time to get that end of it kind of nailed down a little bit. But, you know, I keep going back to like what other states are doing, and you know, it seems to me like, and I've always kind of wondered, like I wanted to go to a game in Illinois or wherever, you know, a bordering state, and kind of see what the reaction was to it, because I've heard mostly positive things from other states. So I'd be curious though to find out how they funded it and financed and did those sorts of things, especially at maybe some of the more like Southern Illinois schools that are a little smaller and or Kentucky and things like that. But yeah, I mean, that's a good idea. It's something I hadn't actually thought of, but I think that'd be something maybe that's potentially could be helpful for sure.
So speaking of Indiana needing to catch up with the times, no, I'm just kidding. one of four states that don't allow high school athletes to get NIL money. Where's your stance on that? And I seen you guys had a story in the Indy Star about that as well for the state of Indiana.
Yep, that's a proposal. Again, another one that'll be coming forward, and I think probably more likely to pass than actually the shot clock, in my opinion. It's going to be called PBA, personal branding, instead of NIL, but kind of the same idea. You know, you can make money off of, you know, if you're doing a couple of examples were like you go to Dick's Sporting Goods or whatever, and you're, you know, getting paid for that. Now you can't wear like your school uniform and still make that, you know, make that money. You'd have to just be representing yourself, your own name, and not, you know, not the school that you're playing for. Or you could go to the YMCA and do a camp and get paid for it, but you couldn't represent, you know, Hamilton Southeastern High School or whatever. So, you know, so there's those opportunities, I think. And you know, talking to Paul Neidig about this, I talked to him earlier last week about it. And he said, sort of think of it as, you know, owning, it's something that you own. You own your own name. So you can make money off your own name. You don't own Hamilton Southeastern High School. You can't make money off HSC. So, you know, kind of think of it in those terms. And I know, like you said, DC, I think we're Alabama, Hawaii, Mississippi, and us are the only four that don't allow it. So I really think this is going to happen. I don't know that it's going to actually be that big a deal, to be honest with you. I think the worry I think is on the side of, you know, what's become of college sports and the collectives. And, you know, my question too is like, if Phil, the name sporting goods store is paying you, you know, where's that money coming from? You kind of have to make sure that in the background that money's not coming from somewhere else, you know? So, you know, that to me, that's the worry. Like, and I know those things are, you know, hard to control or whatever, but you know, once the collectives come in, and I don't think people will do that, you know, they won't do it because it's going to be not allowed. But in the background, I do kind of wonder, like, you know, this kind of does open up some things that could be problematic. Now, I do agree. I do think we should do this. Honestly, I think kids, you know, should have this opportunity. I think it's going to help keep kids here, possibly that might be looking to go to other states and play. You know, this is something Jeff Teague brought up to me after the, you know, after they lost to Mount Vernon. We were talking about, you know, what players he's going to have coming back next year. You know, can you build kind of the things you ask a team after they lose in this, in a tough regional game like they did. And, you know, he's kind of, he's honest. He's like, I don't know who we're going to have coming back next year because a lot of my kids could go to prep school. You know, he brought up a lot of the issues we're talking about. Like, we don't have NIL, we don't have shot clock. You know, so there are people who are in favor of this. And, you know, to be honest with you, I would be more in a, I guess, in favor of this and even a shot clock. I don't care as much about a shot clock, but I do think this would be good if people do it the right way. And assuming they do, I think it can be a positive thing. You know, I do worry about the people who are behind the scenes in some cases in recruiting kids. And we all know that happens. It's happening. You know, I hear about it almost daily. So, you know, that's something that's going to continue. It happened before the transfer rule changed. It's been happening. Crawfordsville in 1911 had a transfer from Lebanon. So it's been happening for over 100 years. So, but, you know, it's just one of those things. Like, it does open up some problematic ideas, I would say. But I do think kids should have that opportunity to be employed and kind of use their own name to make money. I don't think I think we'd be behind the times not to pass this proposal.
Kyle, I want to get you out of here on this. You know, you joined the show just right at the tail end of us talking about the SAC and its potential. You know, it's in flux right now, I would say is the best way to put it. It's on the football side with, you know, Carroll and Homestead and some of the other programs. The gap inside the conference is, you know, widening each year as far as competitiveness. But you know, obviously being down and around the Indy area, you know, Center Grove and Carmel, they're both coming back to the MIC this year. You know, for my question is, you know, if a program like those, you know, on that caliber level, you know, they're on, you know, in similar classes as Carroll and Homestead, you know, depending on the year for 6A and 5A, how difficult was it for those programs to find games? And it, as an independent, whereas obviously you have the guaranteed games if you're in a conference. And, you know, what is their reasoning why they're coming back to the MIC?
Yeah, man, it was kind of a brutal breakup to begin with, and a lot of bad feelings and things said that some were unfair, I think, to Carmel and Center Grove. Some, you know, it kind of depends where you stand on it, you know, or what school you're involved with. But it was definitely a messy breakup, I would say, and messy between Carmel and Center Grove, to be honest with you. There's definitely some hard feelings between those schools and also the former MIC, you know, members that they had been with for like 25 years. I mean, they were very close conference and did a lot of great things together. But yeah, I mean, from that side of things, like I feel like Carmel had an easier time finding games. They got Westfield on the schedule. That's been a great game these last couple of years. It's season opener I think week two maybe, but it's been a great – I mean, those schools are right next to each other. They're rival just by location. So that's been fantastic gate and great crowds for football. Those teams played in basketball previously, and that continues to be a great rivalry. So we're kind of where Carmel's located on the north side of the city. You know, they have some – rivals in the HCC that just kind of make sense. And that was kind of the original idea, was they were going to go to the HCC, and Center Grove was too. And that was kind of what led to the breakup, was, you know, the MIC found out, the MIC said, we're not even going to wait for the HCC to vote. We're going to kick you out. And then the HCC didn't put them in. So that kind of left them on an island where, yeah, it was, there'd probably be a good documentary to be done about that whole situation. But yeah, so then, you know, Center Grove had a heck of a time finding football games. You know, I don't – Eric Moore, I talked to several times, the Center Grove coach, about it. And, you know, they were just – you know, they wanted – he wanted back in the MIC immediately, but it just wasn't going to happen. So, you know, it was a big struggle for especially Center Grove to find games. I think one year they played five out-of-state regular season football games. And that just – to me, it's like, why are we playing these games? And granted, there were some cool games. I went to Canton with them to watch. That was a cool game against St. Edward out of Cleveland. You know, that was a cool game. But some of these other games, it's like people just – there's no familiarity with these teams are playing. Why aren't they playing Carmel? On paper, it makes no sense. Or why aren't they playing, you know, Lawrence North or whatever? You know, so – you know, so to be back in the MIC is I think it's great. it's maybe not where they intended to be in the HCC. I don't know if that will happen. I think for Carmel, maybe that could happen down the road. You know, and I think that would work. Center Grove, they don't really have anything else that really fits right now for them. But I'm glad the MIC is back together. You know, having those eight teams back together will be good, I think. The HCC has continued to grow, and I think will continue to be a powerhouse. I mean, Brownsburg, the last couple of years, Westfield has become a powerhouse in football. It's raised the level of, and it's kind of forced these MIC teams to get better too. So I think that will, it kind of feeds off itself around here in football. I mean, it just, these schools are powerhouses, and it makes 6A football is probably the most fun thing I think to cover of anything because of that. So, but yeah, I'm glad they're back together. I don't know what the future holds. I think it kind of depends on the, you know, kind of the, the growing of the suburban schools has kind of changed the landscape a little bit and made them more on the level playing field. But yeah, I think, you know, I think it's going to be better than what it was. Cause yeah, to your point, they were not finding games that were, you know, that meant much. So I think playing these rivalry games is going to be a good thing moving forward again.
Yeah. I think it's, you know, you mentioned the growing of the suburbs. It's a very similar story. You know, I live in the Homestead district, so it's they're growing rapidly. Same with Carroll on the north side of Fort Wayne. So it'd be interesting to see, you know, what eventually happens. I think we're just starting to see the beginnings of it play out at the moment. Kyle, thank you so much for joining us here on the show. We appreciate your insight. Always follow your work, and you do a great job. So thank you for coming on.
No problem, guys. Thanks for having me. Sorry, I was doing this on my phone. Hopefully it worked out okay. But my computer, you know, things happen. Technology sucks sometimes.
No, you're good. You look good and sounded great. So thank you again for coming on.
You bet. Thanks, guys. We'll see you.
Yep, that is Kyle Nedrep from the Indy Star joining us here on the show. Always appreciate, like I said, his insight. Always very plugged in just around the state, and is able to be in like those rooms that he was in yesterday with the administrators and get the sense of where things stand as far as topics on the shot clock. And I agree with him that I think it'll eventually come into place for the game. I think you and I are both in favor of it. I think we just need to modernize the game, you know, man. It's and I think it reached kind of a different level when it happens in a class 4A state title game. You know, it can happen on a Tuesday night,
yeah,
down in North Judson or Jeffersonville. It can happen and go completely unnoticed. But when you put it on the biggest stage with some of your biggest schools and your most attended game for the entire year, and there's possibly the best team in the state holding the ball, that can't happen. That can't happen.
I'm glad Commissioner Knight brought that up too. I'm glad he brought it up at the conference, because like that caused a lot of uproar in the state, and yeah, brought up the discussion. I mean, we've been, you know, obviously it's been a discussion, honestly, to have a shot clock in Indiana, but that really brought it back up as like a main topic for the state. So that's huge that they're at least trying to move towards it. Like Kyle said, it may not happen. And if you miss any parts of the interview with Kyle, it'll be up on our YouTube page immediately after the show, or when we're done, just subscribe to our YouTube page, the Sideline Sports Show, and our interview with Kyle. Full interview with Kyle will be up, Kyle Nedrep of the Indy Star, as we dug into all kinds of stuff that's going on. A lot happening in the IHSAA right now.
Yeah, I wanted to, you know, touch on that thing of the MIC and Carmel and Center Grove coming back in.
That's a great question.
It alludes to like what Coach Johnson was saying in his comments earlier, like how difficult it was for those programs, specifically Center Grove, to go find teams where they had to go out of state and play five games out of state. Like, that's just ridiculous.
Crazy. Those are meaningless games. Like, what?
Yeah. And they have no, you know, standing on the postseason or anything like that. You just, like you said, have no connection. And that's why there's like the uproar. If you make it the comparison to like college football and college realignment, like what connection does Indiana have to Washington as far as playing them? There's no rivalry, no, you know, real reason to play this game, except for, you know, UCLA. Maybe the odd chance that they meet in the Rose Bowl in football. Like it's all I don't know what the reasoning was for the MIC and them. I think they just wanted to, you know, play more competitive games and stuff like that. They felt like the rest of the conference wasn't, you know, growing with them. And that's, I think, some of the frustration with Carroll and Homestead. I think that they're, you know, they are growing. And I mentioned the school districts that they are growing at a rapid rate and maybe not as fast as the other, you know, districts. And some of them, you know, are private schools with Concordia, Dwenger, and Lures. And it's hard to, you know, grow and keep up at the same level as competitiveness is, especially when, you know, you're able to grab from a different pool of kids. And I think you add the layer of being able to transfer and play at a different school. I think all of these are connected in some way or fashion. And that's why I think it's so interesting to see where we go. And if you missed any of our, you know, conversation on before our interview with Kyle Nenrip, you can go back and watch the full show and get caught up, as we've had a, you know, full length 20 minute discussion on it beforehand, as I've seen that we're, you know, just getting an influx of viewers here in the last few minutes. So if you missed anything from the show, go back and or chime in the comments if you have thoughts as well.
Yeah, well, answer them right here. The comment section is open. I'm 100% with Kyle too, on board with NIL being much more important right now for high school athletes in the state of Indiana than a shot clock. NIL has like been long. Wait, are you not for NIL?
No, I am. I am for it. I don't know.
I was like,
no, I wasn't. I don't know.
Kids get paid, Bryce?
No, my face must have like put off. I was thinking about something else.
I was thinking about the next point
I was gonna, you know,
I was ready
bring
to attack.
Up.
I had that steam coming out.
No. I was just thinking, which one would I rather have?
One of four states in the entire country that don't allow high school athletes to make NIL money. One of four.
Yeah.
That's insane. Like, what are we doing? What are we doing? Like, really? What does it really hurt for a high school athlete to go do a, because, like, you know, especially in today's day and age, especially in, like, I'm not even trying to make this a football versus basketball debate. Is it a football state or is it a basketball state? Like, I'm going to keep it 100. Football right now is king in the state of Indiana. I don't care what anyone says. Football is king right now in this state. And there's look at all these top athletes that we have ranked in the, you know, 4-star, 5-stars, which at the end of the day, you know, some people like it, some people don't. Some people agree with the stars, some people support them, whatever. At the end of the day, though, we got athletes like right here. We just had Quay Guilford from Northrop. Yep. He's going to Ohio State. He's doing all this different stuff, and he could have been making a little cash, NIL. His name brings likeness. We got and look at down at Brownsburg. I mean, look at the talent they got. Like, loaded. Right. Brendan Sharp easily could be getting NIL. Oscar Fry, the quarterback who's going to Illinois State, could be making NIL money. Like, there's so much talent. Those are just a couple. We have five-star receivers down in the Indy area. There's so much talent in this state that, and I'm all for these kids getting a little paycheck, because I wish that we had it when we were playing. We didn't have it. And today's day and age is different, man. Everything's more expensive. It's expensive to live. It's expensive to breathe. Okay. You can't even breathe anymore. Let these kids get that check, man. What are we waiting on? I should have been there.
Yeah, I think if a player like Munchon Sales down at Lawrence North, who's the number one player in the state and like number one wide receiver in his recruiting class, like he can make some money. Like if it was, obviously it depends on what is a priority to you, but just to have the opportunity is something else. Like, he could very well, if he wanted to make some money, just go over to Illinois, go play in Michigan, go play in Ohio, you know, if he wanted to go, you know, make some money, because all those states, and his recruiting is not going to change. He wants to go, you know, make some money. And I think it was like when first the NIL first like was passed, I think it was like Quinn Ewers, I want to say, who like moved states to, I think, somewhere in Ohio, I want to say, because I think they were one of the first to pass. It was either Ohio or Texas. I can't remember exactly, but either direction. But they were one of the states that allowed high school NIL, and he moved there, and then he still ended up being recruited, played at Ohio State, and then eventually played at Texas and got drafted. So I think it, you know, that's just a case where it did work out. And Kyle mentioned that, you know, you could have, you know, there's always going to be shady people in high school sports, you know, that are in it for the wrong reasons. We see it, you know, at lower levels of baseball, travel ball, you know, there's always going to be those shady people. But obviously if it, you know, works out and you want the positives to happen, I think for these,
my thing is, it's going to happen anyway. Opportunity. It's going to happen anyway. It happens anyway. So why not just publicly say you're allowed to, and just differentiate, like, you know, like, because like Kyle said, you represent yourself, not the school. So you can't be like, you know, I'm so-and-so from Center Grove, and I, you know, I'm here at Dick's Sporting Goods. No, it's you. And I think that is what these athletes are going to benefit the most out of, because it's their name at the end of the day. So, you know, I love this idea. I really hope it gets passed immediately, because it's long overdue.
Yeah. I mean, you could – these kids can earn money by working a job too. So this is like – this is essentially working a job in high school. You know, when I played baseball in high school, I had a part-time job. I worked at a Pizza Hut. Like, okay, I think a very similar thing. It's just how you get the money is different, and where it's coming from is different. You would be getting paid by the local Pizza Hut to promote.
That's impressive in its own. I was so tired after baseball, I didn't have any energy for anything else. So
mostly on the weekends after games were already played and stuff like that. So.
I'm impressed.
But it's like
you were a pitcher, though. You were a pitcher, so
don't act like I wasn't doing anything. I was also a DH, man.
I was DH.
I was also a DH. And then my senior year, I started to play more first base. You know, I wasn't, you know, very fast and wasn't moving around the bases super well, but got the job done. Got the job done.
Just picking on you, brother.
I know. I don't want to bring up – I can bring up my resume if you want, but
– I mean, look, we can be 2 months over here talking about our glory days, but instead we can promote – I'm really excited, though. All seriousness, like I said, we didn't have anything like this when we were playing, and with as much talent as we have today, which is more than ever, across the state in basketball, football, all of that, baseball too, the talent across the state is better than it's ever been, so they deserve it. So I'm really hoping this gets passed immediately.
Yeah, I think it will. I think it has more of a shot than the shot clock. But man, for the shot clock, I would feel like it needs to be, the game needs to be modernized. You move forward, like Kyle said, you watch a game on TV. There's a shot clock. There's a shot clock.
Now, yeah, that's how basketball is played.
The only I don't know why men's college basketball plays halves, as opposed to every other game across the world has quarters, but there's just things that, you know, I think would just help modernize the game. And I think it ultimately will eventually change. I think we're both in agreement there that it will eventually change. Maybe not this vote, because as Kyle mentioned, if it doesn't pass this time, it's more than likely going to be tabled for 2 years, which is unfortunate. You would hope that it would be up on proposal every single year to hopefully gain momentum. But I think the momentum is slowly but surely going on the other side. So
I love it.
All right. Let's get some NFL draft thoughts from you and I. Let's first talk about the Colts, and then we'll talk about the college players that were taken from some of our teams in the state. The Colts did the Colt thing where they traded back, was it 7 or 8 spots to get C.J. Allen in the second round. And then in the third round, they took LSU safety A.J. Holsey. I think Holsey is how it's kind of spelled. His comp, Holsey's was Bob Sanders. That was the comp that I saw on ESPN. And the very first clip that I saw.
Before or after he was drafted to the Colts?
I don't know. I don't. This was after. This was written by AJ Aaron Schatz from ESPN. That was his comp. It was like, oh, the Colts may have found their new, you know, Bob Sanders, which I'm all for. If he ends up being like a Bob Sanders type, great. But that was his profile. Is he's not super great in coverage, which it feels like you kind of need. He's more of like in the box kind of safety. He's going to come up and make tackles in the short, you know, passing.
For someone else is going to get burned in secondary, and the Colts are going to get scored on in the red zone. Sounds good. Let's do it.
You got it. But I will say, like, the first clip of him after him being announced was like him coming up and just sticking somebody. So I was like, okay, he did that once. So sure, you want to make the comparison to Bob Sanders? Great. But then the other guy that they drafted, CJ Allen, was his pre-draft comp was Roquan Smith as a guy. And Roquan Smith has had a productive career in the NFL. He's probably going to be the replacement to Zaire Franklin, who was moved over to the Packers. So thank you for the Colts on that one.
Okay.
We'll see if he's any good. He's been in the league for quite some time.
So well, he went to the Packers, so probably not.
That's the
franchise you go to kill your career.
Well, I think Franklin's going to be Quay Walker's replacement because Quay Walker left. So we'll see. Your thoughts on, because I was around some Colts people yesterday, let's say, like fans, I should say.
I'll be around one later this evening, so I'm sure I'm gonna hear it.
And they're just like, there's just no interest. They're like, they've just been beaten down by how mediocre this team has been. They're just like, whoever they pick has no influence on me whatsoever. Like I asked them, like, when I first, you know, said hello, I was like, what do you think the Colts are going to do today? They're like, I don't care. That's where the Colts fan base is right now. And I think it's just a sad state of affairs because of what this team has done over the last handful of years.
Yeah. I mean, it's the Colts. So like expecting them to trade up in the first round isn't going to happen. They didn't have a pick on the first day, so I already didn't have a ton of excitement for their fan base and their franchise. Under Chris Ballard, they're never going to trade up. It's not really going to happen.
Yeah.
So it did not shock me at all. But at the same time, though, you know, to stay on the Colts side and kind of take their side on things a little bit, this is one of those drafts, and we talked about it last week. Yeah, I'm taking the Colts side, believe me.
Wow, that's surprising.
That hurt to say. But this was one of those drafts we talked about last week where, like, it's not super strong. It's not like a ton of talent in this draft. Like there was like, you know, there's a few guys that I think were taken in the top 10 that I'm like, all right, yeah, they're going to be instant contributors. But like, and then in the first round, there's maybe 5 to 7 guys that I would argue are going to be contributors from day one in camp. And it's just one of those drafts where you got to draft on need. You draft on position need, you draft on team need. And that's what the Colts did. They need defense. Now taking a safety that's going to get burned in the red zone and get burnt deep. I'm not sure that's exactly what they needed to add. They already have that. You could have just stayed pat. If that's all you're going to do, you could have took something else in that position, like a quarterback. But at the same time, it's just one of those drafts, man. So it's not going to be a very exciting draft. Same for the Bears. You know, when you have these low picks and not even day one picks for the Colts example, my Broncos example, you just draft on team need. You go to the team needs, you look at the roster, you look at the depth chart and say, what can we do to make our team just a little bit deeper? Where the Colts have a little bit more, you know, dire needs, I think, and they're starting within their starters. But you just draft on team need. And I think the Colts did that. They drafted a linebacker. They drafted a safety. So I'm cool with what they did, honestly.
Yeah, I think I think you put it accurately, that this is the positions that they needed to fill. Those their highest team needs was linebacker and safety, and they went out and got guys that are probably going to be starters, if not rotation guys, for this team. We'll have to find out if they're any good or not, because you never know with any of these draft picks. 50% of them work out, 50% of them don't. You know, sometimes it's an undrafted guy that comes up and is, you know, has that chip on his shoulder that he was undrafted, and he ends up being, you know, a really productive player for 10
years. What I love, what I've been following the most, is all the Notre Dame and IU picks.
Yeah, I have been as well. It feels like the Jets really loved what the Hoosiers did this past season. Right. As they took Omar Cooper Jr. at 30, and then took
Daniel
Hans. That's the who I was like
the draft right there.
I was kind of hoping the Packers would take him because there's they so picked many like
teams in the first like.
Yeah,
I don't understand why did he fall so far.
It's
nobody has given me a legitimate answer on that.
It's just his size. He's 5'8", 5'8", 150 pounds soaking wet, man. Like he's, but I agree. If you watch him play, shouldn't matter. The dude is all over the place. He's aggressive. He's not afraid to get his nose in there and hit somebody. That's, I agree with you. I would take, like I said, I wanted the Packers to draft him, but the Jets got him 3 picks before the Packers picked. I was hoping that he would fall just a few more spots because Green Bay ended up taking another corner from South Carolina.
Everybody know who Wes Welker is?
Yeah.
Everybody know Wes Welker?
You should know if you don't.
You know Wes Welker, okay? I'm not going to go that far, but probably one of Tom Brady's best wide receivers in his tenure. I mean, Randy Moss, you could throw him Julian in there. Edelman. I mean, yeah, but like –
Deion Branch.
All right. Whoa. Wes Welker, though.
I'm just throwing names
at you. Wes Welker was a beast, okay? And not just in, and not just there. 5'9"?
No, I know. It. 5'9"? But like, how many of those guys are there? How many? That's where I get you. Like, how many of those guys actually do work out that are 5'9"?
And he is on the Jets. Who's going to be even throwing him the football?
I don't know. It's going to be tough.
They might be bringing back Johnny Football.
I doubt they bring back Johnny Football. But
bring back Johnny Football. Tim Tebow coming back, baby.
No, definitely not. I think so far the Indiana players that have been taken, Mendoza to the Raiders, obviously. Omar Cooper Jr. and D'Angelo Ponce to the Jets. Keelan Black was pick number 90 to Tampa Bay. On the Notre Dame side, we had Jeremiah Love to Arizona, third pick. I'm happy for Jeremiah Love because he's going to get his money. But I think that team that he's going to be on is going to be bad. So
we were talking about that earlier. It's crazy. I feel like I've met a fan for every single football team. I don't think I've ever met anyone that likes the Arizona Cardinals in my life. Is that not weird?
I'm trying to think. I don't know one either. Like, I know Steelers fans. I know Lions fans. I know some Vikings people. I mean, obviously, you're a Broncos fan. So I know a Broncos fan. I know Dolphins people even around here. And it's like, yeah, you never hear like, man, I love what Kyler Murray's doing out there in the desert. You know, another short king out there.
oh, I don't know why that was so funny.
But yeah, I feel bad for him because he's going to go to a crappy franchise that's going to go nowhere. Got
Carson Beck.
Okay.
I like on paper the Cardinals had a good draft, but we'll see. Yeah, I mean, who's blocking for him? That's my
exactly. Point. Their line is always so bad, man. So and. All the best to him. Hopefully he has, you know.
Somewhere.
He gets traded in 3 years to
got over 100 people watching. One of them, I bet, is an Arizona Cardinals fan. They're typing right now.
I doubt it.
Actually, we have so-and-so. We have Johnny Taylor at old tackle.
They used to have he might still be on the roster. I don't know. I don't watch Arizona Cardinals football. They played the Packers like 2 years ago, I think. That was the only time I've watched them. They had like Mercado was one of their running backs, I think.
This is funny.
I could be even butchering his last name. Anyways,
I've never heard that name in my life, brother. I'm not gonna lie to you.
They had James Conner, who was good for a while there. I
mean, yeah.
That's still what, 3-4 years ago, maybe even longer. That's crazy.
I mean, at that point, just bring up Adrian Peterson.
And he was at the end of his career. when he played there. I mean,
Kurt Warner.
Carson Palmer, like Larry Fitzgerald. Like, we could name some guys, but it's been a long time.
I hope they got a change in the tide for Jeremiah Love's sake. I'm a big fan of him, and I think they're getting a gamer. As long as he has a line blocking for him, he's going to end up being one of the best that we got in the NFL. So I'm hoping that they treat him right, get him some protection. And then Carson Beck, too. Man, I like Carson Beck. He's like 40 years old, stepping in as a quarterback in the NFL, but I still like Carson Beck. He's ready to play now. He's been playing a while, so he's ready to go.
He's ready to play, and he's ready to throw you an untimely interception late in the game. Hmm. He is ready for that. Jadarian Price also went in the first round, at the last pick of the first round, to Seattle. I think that's a good situation for him. Obviously, they just coming off the Super Bowl. Malachi Fields.
Only because of Bo Nix got hurt.
you're never going to let that down. No. Malachi Fields goes to the Giants, a weapon for Jackson Dart. And then Eli Raridan, the tight end for Notre Dame, went to New England. That makes every number one tight end for Notre Dame has been drafted dating back to Anthony Fasano in 2006.
Whoa. I was going to say, that's high school days, brother. That's
so crazy. If you have any argument or qualms about who tight end you is, it's Notre Dame. If you want to be a number one tight end at Notre Dame, you are almost guaranteed to go into the NFL draft. I mean, you have Michael Mayer, Cole Kmet, Anthony Fasano is one of them. Kyle Rudolph, Tyler Eifert. Hello.
You're not going to mention Eifert? Let's go.
No, I was getting there. The list is long, man. It is. So it would not shock me if we were talking at this time next year about Cooper Flanagan, who is going to be Notre Dame's number one tight end this year, being drafted. So that's it for the draft. As far as like local-ish players, I don't care what the Bears have done. Sorry, Bears fans.
As a
Packers fan, I think who did they draft? They drafted a receiver.
That's crazy. They took the safety out of Oregon in the first round.
Oh, Dylan Thielemann.
Beast, former Purdue Boilermaker, by the way. Boiler up.
Who Notre Dame absolutely torched for 60-plus points when he was there.
Moving on.
Before we get out of here, we're going to be wrapping up the show here in a minute. I do want to mention, you know, we do have some playoff hockey going on here in Summit City. We have the Comets. They're up 1-0 in their division series semifinals. There is, I think today is game two. If I'm not mistaken, I know the environment.
The jungle.
Yeah, the jungle is always rocking this time of year. I saw somebody posted it. It might have been somebody from the Gazette who, I think it's James Krause is covering them now as their beat reporter, I want to say. But he posted like a picture of like the Ticketmaster, like open seats, and there was like nothing. Like it's been jam-packed, especially down this late stretch. And I imagine if you're going out this weekend to catch the Comets in the playoffs, it's going to be a great environment. It's always a good environment, even during the regular season. I was out at a game earlier this year, and it was great. Before we do officially get out of here, did you see in Indiana football's championship rings, they were announced?
No, I've immediately tried to forget the college football season, so no, I haven't.
Well, they had their rings. I think it was announced like with their spring game that was yesterday, and the one interesting thing, a lot of it is like what you would expect as far as like a championship ring, but the one cool thing that I think is like a double-edged sword is they have sand from a Miami beach in the ring. So they beat Miami and they also won the championship in Miami. So little significance there for those championship rings to have some Miami sand in them.
I like it.
Yeah, I thought that was a nice touch. You know, if you could add something onto a championship ring that just doesn't make it look huge and gaudy. I think it's pretty cool.
I'm looking forward to those Purdue Boilermakers championship rings next year.
I think the championship is in, I want to say Vegas.
Bring on the casino. Bring on the Lucky Sevens.
Yeah, so you're just going to put like a a poker chip in the championship ring or a
Boilermakers, maybe boiler up.
Man, I have not heard a, and maybe I'm just following the wrong people and the algorithm is just not working. I have not heard a single thing about Purdue spring football. And I haven't heard anything good or bad. So I couldn't tell you if they are killing it in the spring, if they're doing well, if somebody's emerged. I tell you what, it's rough. It's rough out there for Purdue.
I guess I set myself up for that. I haven't either, and I'm a Purdue fan and follow a lot of Purdue people. So what does that tell you?
Yeah. I would say, hey, let's get a guest on, but like even they're probably like, I don't know. They're like, I don't know, this team's probably gonna be bad again, man.
All right, chill. Coach Odom's changing things around.
All right. Well, hopefully. All right. That'll do it for the show. I don't think DC wants to hear me talk about the
rather not
winning Cubs these days. They won 10 games in a row. Beat the Dodgers last night.
We're good.
All right. Well, maybe next week we'll talk about the Cubs.
45 seconds of baseball, bringing it back.
Yeah, we'll bring back our 44 seconds of baseball.
We'll produce a quick little video, and we'll bring back 45 seconds of baseball.
I think we just need to create like a little timer that we can just throw in the bottom of the
screen that.
There. Yeah,
let's do that.
We'll work on that. I know because the program, the software that we use all the time is updating all the time, so you can do a whole bunch of different stuff.
I know, it's confusing.
So, like, I think we do have the ability to throw some sounds in if we want.
We do. I've seen that.
I do see that. Some of them are, you know, pretty bad and generic right now. But if we can, I don't think I had the files for some of our old stuff that we used.
No, we can't use them anyway. It'll probably get flagged on here.
I don't know, because we had Nick Ferrer. You remember that? Don't sell yourself short. Right. I don't think that would get flagged.
The Tom Brady one definitely would get flagged, probably.
Yeah, if it was like used by like stuff like that, like we can't play any NFL music that we used to play for our.
You probably do Mike Maz's "Ouch."
Yeah, that was a good one. Ouch. That was.
Yeah, we gotta bring back. But yeah, 45 seconds of baseball coming back next week, maybe.
Yeah, let's bring it back. We'll get in the graphics department and we'll get that. We'll get it
working. AKA us.
Yeah, either you or I, whoever's feeling motivated that day. make sure you subscribe to the Get Indiana Podcast Network. This is where we are a part of their show that produces 3 episodes a day throughout the week. And you can find our show at getindiana.com. Subscribe to their newsletter that comes out, I think, twice a week. So you can find out great stuff about the Hoosier State that is trying to not be so far behind the times, with a shot clock eventually coming and some NIL for some high school players as well. Hopefully we are put ourselves in the modern age of rather than being stuck 200 years in the past. But for DC Hendricks, I'm Bryce Vance. Make sure you subscribe to our channel on YouTube. You can follow us on Facebook, X, Instagram. You can find us on there at Bryce and DC. For DC Hendricks, I'm Bryce Vance. We'll be back on our regularly scheduled time next week on Sunday. But thank you so much for joining us here on a Saturday morning.